Welcome back to Sweet Pea Podcast, The Early Years, with your host, Loretta McDonough. Today finds us over in north side of Dublin, and we are speaking to Dr. Geraldine French, and she is Programme Chair and Bachelor of Early Childhood Education for the Institute of Education, DCU St. Pat's. So today we're going to talk about babies in the baby room and the importance of the development of the babies from a very young age and how we can nurture them and build relationships around them and make sure they're getting the absolutely best care that they can get and how as an adult we can give them that best care. But the first of all, just tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into this field yourself, early childhood.
Okay, well, my background originally was in psychology. So I qualified with a master's in clinical psychology way back in the early 80s at the time of the last recession.
Okay.
And so while waiting to get a job as a psychologist, I was looking for kind of opportunities to continue professional development and that kind of thing. And I came across what was ANCO, I think it's now moved to FOSSA. And they had this program and it was called Start Your Own Nursery. So, of course, at the time I was thinking, nursery, not interested in gardening. But then I noticed that in the middle of it, there was this possibility to have placement experience with very young children. And the one thing I did know, if you know, even if I was going to get into psychology, because that's always that I was very much convinced about, was the importance of those early years and how they probably were under-recognised. So I knew I wanted to work with children. So I thought this would be a really good way of getting experience of working with children. But I didn't have a notion in hell of actually opening up a setting myself.
Okay.
But anyway, on we go. A year later, was a full year course. It was an amazing experience at the time. Very inspirational woman arrived in and there was a number of us. And then we moved on to join the National Children's Nurses Association, or to form it, I should say, prior to regulations, when we were looking for regulations at the time. So what happened was another person on that programme asked, you know, while I was waiting for this job to arrive, you know, would I like to help her set up? And ultimately, I enjoyed it so much that I thought, well, why not do it myself? So I did.
Good for you.
And I would still be doing it if it wasn't for the fact that our landlord at the time sold the house at the last recession, and then things came on.
Yeah.
House prices went rose again.
Oh my God, up sky high in
absolutely.
The 90s and 2000s. Yeah.
Then I joined Bernardo's after that. So we had to leave. He sold the building. I joined Bernardo's and I had a fantastic experience in a whole variety of roles, working within kind of community projects, setting up toy libraries, parent and toddler groups, becoming a training officer, but always working within that kind of range of supporting families and again, focused on the importance of the birth to fives.
Okay, so you were always interested in that early years.
Oh yeah,
always.
Oh yeah,
something was beckoning you in. Come on.
I've had different roles, but it's been the key thing, whether it's been supporting families who are living in poverty, who have young children from birth to five, because I kind of became an independent researcher at one point and I got involved in lots of projects to do with social exclusion, really, and in particular lone parents. But anyway, the point was that it was always about supporting people who are working with children from birth to five.
Yeah.
And then I suppose I, what did I do? I was working for a very long time as an independent researcher. And then I started doing some part-time teaching in the Dublin Institute of Technology, as it was then, on their degree programme. And I suppose finally time moved on and I realised I was engaged in research, but I needed to have a little bit more certainty in terms of what I was saying and a little bit more theoretical knowledge in the area. So then I thought I would do my own studies, doctoral studies. And what did I look at? But I looked at what I, well, it's commonly known, I think, that within good practice, if you really want to get to the heart of making a difference, it is those responsive interactions between adults and children. So that's what I focused my study on.
Okay.
And then I suppose time moved on and 4 years ago, the opportunity to develop this degree programme here in DCU came along. So I applied for the post of program chair, and well, here I am. Oh. And we are going to have our first graduates in November.
Know.
I'm so proud of them.
You must be so, it'll be a very emotional day. I have to, you won't even expect it, and it will be. Yeah. And yes, it's a great achievement. It's a fantastic achievement for early years to get to here.
Yes.
You know, when you were starting off in that program in ANCO, and it was just a program, and it must have been one of the first for nursery for early years, would
I
have been?
I think so, it probably was, yes.
You know, yeah. And you were there at the very start, and now it's a degree program. Mm. It's fantastic. You know, congratulations and well done. You should be very proud
Thank
of yourself,
you.
Never
Thank
mind
you.
Your graduates. It's a great achievement, and I think it shows us where the sector is going. You know, we have evolved, and it's been a slow process, and you were saying that yourself and your friends, you know, you started up your own programs to try and get regulations in to you know, to maybe to set certain standards and to have our curriculums and something that we can all follow, and we're all on the same standards and have a quality assurance within the sector. And all that is for children.
Yes.
It's not for you. It's not for the adults. It's not for the parents. It's like, obviously, adults and parents have to be supported to be able to support the children, but it's all really for the benefit of the children, and your interest is the very youngest of the children. Mm-hmm. And why do you think it's so important that, it, you know, 0 to 12 months and 12 to 2 years, that they should be, their relationships they have with adults and other people and their environment should have any kind of quality or standard? Mm. Why is it important?
I think we have an underestimation of the capacities of babies and what's happening in their brains effectively. People often refer now to the first 1,000 days, which is basically, you know, birth to three. Mm-hmm. And like we know, for example, that, you know, children's capacities were previously underestimated. You know, we thought they couldn't empathize, they couldn't think, they couldn't kind of consider cause and effect or explore effectively. But now we know that that's quite the opposite. I mean, a very young baby, 6 weeks old, can feel stress, and if the adult who's holding them is stressed. We know from, you know, studies from, say, Alison Gopnik and Patricia Kuhl, who talk about the statistical genius of babies and how they're able to look at probability. I mean, they'll say they use research looking using the looking time technique. So you get like 6 month old babies being able to predict that a certain order of balls will be pulled out, you know, so they register a surprise if they're not pulled out in the same order that they were expecting.
Yeah.
You know, an awful lot is going on in their brains. I mean, in fact, Patricia Kuhl refers to what's going on in babies' brains is nothing short of rocket science. You know, if you consider that at the end of the first year, half of the postnatal growth of the brain development occurs. You have a 20-fold synaptic development within the first couple of months. It is just remarkable. Even just think of your tiny newborn baby that is so vulnerable and dependent on the care of adults. And you take that same child 3 years later who's capable of running, jumping, and let's face it, arguing back.
Absolutely.
You know,
feeding
themselves, dressing themselves, being so much more independent. I mean, what happens in those 3 years is phenomenal. And what we also know, I suppose, is how children learn. And we know that they learn through relationships. Their sense of self-esteem emerges through how they are viewed by others. Their whole capacities are developed through those relationships and through exploration and play, of course.
Yeah. And it's really important. And all those things that you just said, play, interactions, relationships, adults, support, the environment. And if something is not fitting, you know, if one of them, or not fails the child, but like if it's, if we're not attentive to any of those parts, does it have an effect on the child? Or do we say, oh, sure, they're only 3 months, 6 months, sure, how would it have an effect on them?
No, I mean, we are actually responsible for the architecture of brain development. If you actually, for just for students generally, if they're interested, going on to the website of the Harvard Center on the Developing Child. There's any amount of fantastic videos and resources which talk about ultimately the importance of serve and return interactions. And that's exactly what it's like.
Yeah.
And they also talk about the importance of relieving stress for children. And when you think about it, a baby doesn't have the capacities that older people have to understand, okay, I'm cold, I can put on a coat. Okay, I'm hungry, I can go to the fridge and get myself a drink. Even a three-year-old is capable of knowing this.
Yeah.
But for your youngest children, what it experienced for them is this overwhelming sense of just sensorial overload. And they need us as adults to mediate that stress for them and to respond to their cues. So it's really about adults being fully alert and fully engaged with babies, you know, being, when they, and again, that idea of the serve and return, I think, is a very nice analogy, because that serve from the baby might be looking in the distance. It could be a gaze, it could be a cry, it could be a startle. But the reality is, it's up to the adult to understand what does that cue mean and then respond to it appropriately, calmly, kindly, consistently, with love, affection, warmth, and very much continuity of care as well, that you're hoping that, you know, this adult remains consistent, you know, within their relationship.
That's really important, isn't it? Like that consistency, that it's even for parents, you know, that to be there, to be in the moment with your child, so that you can, you know, pick up on these little triggers that you're saying that they have. And most parents do know the cry of their baby, and they do know how to settle their child, and they do know, oh, they need hungry, or I'm not doing everything, they don't need anything, they just need to self-regulate, find a little space in their cot or something like that. But it goes deeper when you're not the parent and you are the caregiver.
Mm. Yes.
Doesn't it?
Absolutely.
It goes deeper, and we really need to know that we have that responsibility of being aware that we have to have that deepness, and we have to look for those signs so that we really are there for the child.
Well, I think you've kind of moved into the kind of area of what we know now through research and the kind of specialised pedagogy that's required for working with these very young children. Mm-hmm. And one of the, I suppose, well, just to answer the question about what we should be doing, I mean, it is not looking at ticking the box, which you could look at in terms of then task-based care. You know, a nappy needs to be changed. Well, let's have a nappy factory then.
Yeah.
And we'll move, you know, just get through the whole thing very quickly. But actually, you know, you mentioned curriculum earlier. From a child's perspective, the curriculum is very much all of those routines. If you take a baby coming into an early childhood setting, there's so many transitions and so many elements that are focused on bodily care. So there's this coming in the morning, from departing from the parents, but being greeted by the setting. And hopefully there's a lovely warm handover transition period. You know, they'll probably have something to eat. And of course, when they eat, then they need to have their nappy changed. They'll be tired. They'll have a nap. There'll be a little bit of playtime. And then the whole routine can start all over again. And depending on how the baby, how long the baby is in the setting, that routine can be duplicated or indeed triplicated over the lifetime of the day. So that is the baby's life. So those elements of, say, nappy changing are opportunities for children's learning and for opportunities for their key person to build relationships with them and to, you know, be sensitive. And even actually, if you think about the importance of touch, you know, I think it was Greenman talked about children dying from almost dying of a lack of touch. There's a malnourishing of touch. We can actually survive without food better than we can survive without that kind of human care perspective. So being able to hold a baby, for example, when you're feeding them with a bottle. Mm. I mean, that's really, really important. And I mean, we mentioned continuity as well. Like, you want to have the one person, the same person with that child.
Yeah.
Ideally, not just on a daily basis and throughout the day, throughout the week, but even moving with that child up through the setting.
Yeah.
So the whole specialised relational pedagogy piece is about understanding that the curriculum. So when we talk about pedagogy for very young children, I am thinking babies here. Mm-hmm. We're not so much talking about teaching and learning as about emotional nurturance and learning, because that's what children need. And I know, you know, what happens, I think, is we in terms of, I mean, I did have a setting myself. I do understand to a certain extent the constraints. But, you know, you have routines dictating sometimes. Yeah. People's lunch breaks dictate that, OK, babies must all be fed at one time and then they must all go to sleep at one time, as opposed to focusing on the individual rhythm of the baby and supporting their unique kind of routine within the day.
Yeah.
So being really, really baby centered.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's critically important. But the thing about the specialized relational pedagogy that we require with babies is that it does require knowledge. It does require expertise. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily intuitive. I mean, people, there is this idea that, sure, it's babies, you know.
Yeah.
No, you should have a PhD if you're working with babies. Yeah. They require a particular, I don't know, ethos, a way of working with them, but that is completely tuned in and attuned to where baby is coming from.
Yeah.
And a really complete understanding of what, you know, different babies make different cries. Yes, parents do know their own baby's cry, mm-hmm. generally, you know, what that means. But for an educator working in early childhood setting, that takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
And I mean, you also, of course, need to have that, relationship with the parents so that everybody is singing from the same sheet and everybody is understanding where this particular baby, what their particular needs mm-hmm. are and how they like to be met.
Absolutely. And that takes the caregiver, the responsive adult, to be educated, to know those things, to know the importance of working with a parent and to know the importance of being there for the child, and that you're not just sitting in the room holding a child and comforting them while you're bottling them. There's so much more going on, but you need to be educated in that.
You clearly do. And I mean, think of language. I mean, we know language effectively begets all other areas of education. And I suppose I should, in terms of very young children, broaden that to communication, but you know, these opportunities through caregiving routines are, how do you enhance language? How do you enhance children's communication? And you need to know how to do that. And in Ireland, at the moment, there is an unfortunate consequence of a policy decision where all of the higher capitation funding goes to children from 8 months mm-hmm. up.
Yeah.
So naturally, those with the least qualifications are going to be put into the baby room because there is no incentive. And of course, there's our ratios as well, 1-3. You know, you could argue, you know, it would be nicer if it was 1-2. But mm-hmm. even that alone kind of mitigates against larger ratios, you know, and I mean that by having more adults and children. So we do, this is one of the reasons. Now, you know, I don't mean to kind of upset people who are working in baby rooms who probably are doing a fantastic job. And I have seen wonderful people working with young babies. But if you need to have the grounding, and I think you also need for people working in baby rooms to be valued in terms of the really important work that they're doing.
Yeah.
Which is just essential.
So, and I think also, Ger, I don't know if you agree with me, that I know that I recently finished my degree, like last year.
Congratulations.
And I was so proud.
Yes.
And I think it's changed my practice, and it's changed the way I view myself, more importantly, and that I do count, and what I'm doing does count. So I think that, you know, having, I'm not saying that people working in baby rooms or toddler rooms are not educated. Of course they're educated, and the experience they have is second to none. And we are hoping that our students coming out in our degree courses will have that experience, or even have half of the experience that they have in nurturing and caring. But for their own self-worth, that they're not just a baby room leader. They're not just a baby room assistant. They are that responsive carer that, as you said, in the first year of that child's life, how rapidly the brain develops. And they're the one that's doing that.
Yes, they are. They are nurturing. They are building babies' brains effectively with their work. And actually, I mean, just your point there about education generally. I mean, you asked at some stage earlier on about how did I get into being particularly focused, I suppose, on the birth to threes. And it's like everything, you know, you don't know what you don't know. You know, not everybody has the privilege that I have of engaging in reading and research. And it's recently, it's literally because of my noticing of this unintended kind of policy consequence of probably most vulnerable, working with the most vulnerable children, that I came myself to start looking at babies and then realizing what's going on. Like, I've only learned that in the last maybe 4 or 5 years. So, like, we all change. And when you talk about practice changing, you know, research is throwing up new things all the time.
Yeah.
You know, the key tenets in terms of what's quality practice seem to be, remain to be the same. You know, good relationships with parents,
open
the key person system.
Yes.
But even take the key person system, that's not mandated here. And you could argue maybe for older children, 3 pluses, you don't need a key person because they are so independent. But I do believe for very young babies, there needs to be a key person system, that continuity of care for that baby.
Because I think, you know, the way you were saying that you have to be aware of those little traits they have, or those signals that they're giving you, and they're learning signals so that you have a little bit of it and you can nurture it and you can bring it along, and you're supporting it and you're bringing it along that little path, no matter how young they are. And I think if you don't see that and you're not there as the key person from 6 months to 9 months, from 9 months to they're a year, you know their little quirks and their little things. So why would you bring somebody else in then at a year to start all over again, you know, to learn those quirks? And I think you only have to learn them through experience.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And seeing it is critical. Mm. But you also have to be looking for it and know what it is that you're looking for.
Yeah.
And the whole seeing it, this is the thing that, you know, we don't realise for some children, just, you know, patting that and bah. And you know that what that baby is saying, book, and maybe looking at you with real interest, you know, read me the book, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing you want for children to be able to, it's to support their independence as well. Mm. You know, I'm not necessarily saying, you know, that you're constantly, you know, going around with the baby in your arms all the time, although there's a bit of me that would like that. But I am also thinking that, you know, that this baby, you know, some babies have a very strong need for independence. So how do you support them to be able to begin to feed themselves?
Yes.
And, you know, some babies, as we all know, we like eat very fast. Some babies eat slowly. So it's those tiny, tiny, intimate moments. You know, some babies are so sensitive, you know, for their skin. Mm. They don't like their clothes being taken off and they're having their nappy changed because they feel that cold very much. So then the person who's changed knows to put a towel over the, you know, to do things that just keeps the baby warm.
Yeah.
Some babies don't notice at all. Like, they're completely different from each other. That's the other thing, is babies are so uniquely different from each other, and you need somebody who's literally on their side, you know.
And following them through, like following them through and getting them ready so they can be independent and off you go. So if somebody is working full time in a baby room, how do they get out to be educated? Like, how are they, is it, can you do in-house workshops? You know, does the manager say like, okay, you know, we have level five, but let's you know, they have all the experience, they're really good at what they're doing, but let's say, well, okay, let's have a meaning to what you're doing, and let's relate that to theory and how we can say the importance of that to the child's development. Don't be afraid of theory. Theory is just why it's happening. And then maybe the managers can support, not meaning that you have to go and get a degree or to go self-educate yourself. So maybe other leaders that maybe have the degree, level seven or eight, that are within the setting, could maybe impart on that. You know, so if we could do it, like, you know, not be always blaming somebody else. And we are where we are in Ireland. You know, we have got the lower level in the baby room. So let's stop waiting for, I was out there at a conference there, convention, and Juno Sullivan was there. Mm-hmm. And she was shouting down the podium and she was shouting to the microphone, you know, stop waiting on somebody else to do something, you know, do it yourself. So maybe the answer is that we should self-educate ourselves, you know.
Yeah. I mean, there's no question that makes complete sense. I suppose there are constraints in terms of time because people, you know, typically babies will be in full daycare settings. So where do you find the time to eke out what would be continued professional development? It is essential. Personally, I think that parents could probably cope with once a month, you know, that the setting closes for argument's sake at 2 o'clock on a Friday. It's possible if it's timed in, and that it could be contained within that time. But your point about on-site mentoring is critically important. But people also need to have those professional dialogues. Yeah. They need to be able to talk about their concerns. Mm. They need to be able to articulate what their needs are in relation to meeting babies' needs. They also need, and I'm very much a strong proponent of using video analysis, because I think that is one of the most illuminating ways of surfacing your practice.
And what is that? Is just putting a video
basically
up of yourself?
Basically that you take videos of yourself. And this is what I think in-house could easily be achieved. And your point about having, say, people with level eights or whatever being mentors within settings, yes. Now, I think that would be fantastic. I mean, you know, that we do have some fantastic initiatives and with Better Start, and some of the Better Start mentors use video analysis. Okay. And there's lots of different ways of doing it. There's lots of tools. I mean, there's Martin Mayo, there's the Hannon program.
Yeah.
There's lots of different lenses that you can use when you're looking at yourself in practice. It could be just, you know, a little tick box, whatever. Am I doing this? Am I following cues? Am I extending the language here? Am I adding something new to this interaction? But if you take interactions as being a really critical part of professional practice, having that kind of on-site within a supportive team approach, so nobody is feeling that like everybody's doing it, nobody's feeling that they're being put upon, you know, people can do it as a peer to each other very easily. And the GAS thing is, anytime I've used it, they've quite often turned out to be counselling sessions, and that you're saying, you weren't that bad, you were great, look at what you did there. But people look at themselves and they're very critical about themselves.
That's what I was going to say to you about video and watch. I got to know how I'd feel about watching myself.
Oh, it's dreadful. Yeah. It's absolutely horrible. I mean, there's no question about it. But we've got to get over ourselves. Mm-hmm. We've got to get over that. Yeah. My goodness, you know, I mean, she'll have your photos taken. She'll look at Snapchat, Instagram, look at everything. Yeah. Sure, our lives are portrayed all over the place. This is just a really important 3-minute little piece of video. It is so illuminating in terms of what it can reveal. And usually what people notice is what they're not noticing. You know, it's the child beside them that wasn't getting a look in, or, you know, it's other things that are happening in the background, or maybe they can't see that, somebody's trying to attract their attention and they didn't see it in the moment.
Yeah, dismiss it.
You know, and how do you do? What's this they call the rubber neck? You know, all that kind of thing. But it's just, I personally believe that this would be a very positive way forward if we could kind of move to that sort of professional development. Yeah, working within teams. But it's really important, though, to establish a culture of professional dialogue. Yes. And I think that's one of the issues, that sometimes the culture happens in that, oh, they're only babies.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need, yeah. they should not, you just need to be changed and latin fed. That's it.
Yeah.
Nothing else is needed here. And it's quite the opposite, actually. And so that's where we're back to education. Like, people need to be convinced. Yeah. Parents need to understand the importance of these early years.
Yeah.
I think in settings now, people do. I mean, people are attracted to work with very young children in the main for absolutely the right reasons. And they understand that importance. But it's not valued.
No. Yeah.
So that's the other side of it, you know.
And I think that's where we are important, that we can say, stop now just for a minute and say how important that little moment was today.
Mm.
And if we mark those little moments for the babies, I know we all have journals for the ECC room and we all have the journals for the toddlers and wobblers and stick the picture up outside, and the baby room is the baby room.
Yeah.
So why don't we mark those moments as well? Every little, you know, the gurgle, the Google, or the putting the towel over. Oh, he's freezing today when I changed him. So now he has his own little towel. And stop, mom and dad, and have those moments and say, of course, there is important. And maybe, you know, it doesn't matter what level you are in the baby room. You fight for your moment. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think, Jerry, what you're saying is so true, that babies are so important. And we all have to acknowledge that, even if we're not in the baby room.
Yes. Yes.
And respect the people that are working in the baby room.
Yes. And as you see what they see. And your whole point about communicating those kind of, magical everyday moments that happen in babies' lives to parents, and communicating to them the importance of those moments and what babies are achieving in their own way. I mean, just think about rolling over. It's very interesting. I know it's always a big dilemma if you're the person that sees the maybe the first step and all of that.
I know.
And I think the diplomacy that's required to let the parent have that wonderful achievement and needs to be thought about. But there are giant leaps like that, and then there are very small leaps, you know, reaching out to actually get the ball, the little tiny crawl, the moving over, you know, from sitting onto your hands and knees. I mean, these are major, major events. And I suppose the whole exploratory play piece as well, and how it's important to communicate to parents, you know, to have a drawer in the bottom of their press in the kitchen that's full of pots and pans that babies can take out, because they need to have those kinds of explorations. Yeah. And and it's funny because, you know, the term stimulation always kind of gets me, because when I think stimulation, I kind of think like, you know, sparkly, like all jaggy,
oh, I know.
Jazzy,
yeah,
jazzy,
yeah,
jazzy.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But we definitely need kind of interesting environments and interesting materials and interesting learning experiences and interesting companions for children, you know, to be with.
Yeah, and for them to explore in it. God, Jer, we could talk for just...
We could.
Oh God,
we said we're going to talk for 30 minutes.
I know, but look, listen, there's more to talk about this, and I don't think we've finished.
And I
would love to come back and speak to you a little bit more about pedagogy and the different ways in teaching pedagogy and in learning and nurturing different styles of pedagogy. So maybe we'll talk about that the next time.
That would be lovely, Loretta.
So there you have it. On to the next time. This is your host, Loretta, telling you to take care and be kind to yourself.